camel boots on my feet, bow in my hand, walking in the early dawn to climb the
Redbone, what would you say if I could tell you that you could kill a buck on a certain day?
I would say you're crazy. There's no way to predict how the bucks are going to move.
Well, you're wrong. There's a new camera out called Wise Eye Technologies. These guys can predict the actual deer movement, exact time that a deer is going to come through.
Really? Wise Eye Technology?
This camera has 5-megapixel pictures, has a GPS system built inside, and it's an experience using this camera. It collects data and tells you the movement, wind direction, everything.
On a camera?
On a camera. WiseEyeTechnologies.com.
And how do I find out more information about these guys?
You go to WiseEyeSmartCam.com. I'm using them. You should, too. Make your hunt easier. Use WiseEye.
WiseEye presents Welcome to American Roots Outdoors. Alex Rutledge calling via phone from my cabin, my lodge, in the studio. It's Redbone Mike Crace to Blaine Locke. And this is part two of river smallmouth fishing here in the Ozarks. We're sharing our techniques, our strategies, our secrets of how we catch these smallmouth. We have got a great show lined up for you, and guys, it got hot today.
Yeah, well, where were you yesterday? It's been hot the last 4 or 5 days.
Believe it or not, we've been working on Mallory's little house here. It's a 16x40, as y'all know. You've been watching on Facebook. And we finally got all the drywall and the mud done, the sanding, and we blew the ceilings last night. And won't be long, we'll be painting, and we'll be laying her floor, and she's getting nearer and nearer to moving into her little house.
Well, I know she's got to be excited about that.
Oh, she is. Wayne's had a lot of blood, sweat, and tear in that cabin, haven't you, Wayne?
Yeah, and like I said, when we first started on that, it does not happen overnight, that is for sure. I mean, look at my place. It's been 2 years. I'm still going on it.
Yeah, Wayne, he's doing a room right now. He's getting ready to adopt another child, everybody. And Wayne can do pretty much anything. He blows my mind. I'm not like Wayne. Wayne can tackle anything. He goes to YouTube and watches and learns.
I was going to say, thank goodness for YouTube. That's where I'm learning everything.
Yeah. But you're a hustler, Wayne. I commend you for that. But, again, we've got a great show. And, you know, it's fishing time right now, everybody across the country. And we've done a part one last week talking about technique. York, who is a master. And I want to say this before we get any further. I had the CRSA tournament last week. And the result was Bobby Barnes and Nick Cooper, they won the tournament. Second place went to Casting Carringer. And Eli Fuller, third place went to, I'm trying to remember who third place went to, fourth place went to Jack Rutledge, Troy McAfee, fifth place went to Robbie Williams and Jerry Leach, and third place, who'd that go to? I can't remember. I have to look it up. But anyway, the winning weight was 11-something, a little over 11 pounds. Rick York and I finished seventh out of 23 boats. I lost a fish over 2 pounds or better at the boat, which cost us. We would have been in second with almost 11 pounds. But great turnout. Fish was not where everybody thought they was. It's a lot of boats did not do very good. So you got to know where these fish are at, Redbone, Wayne. Yeah. They move just like deer and turkey do. You got to find them.
Yeah, you got to find them, and they're going to change according to the temperatures and the skies. I mean, there's so many variables, and you just got to learn them all.
Exactly. Now, Wayne, when you fish the lakes up there, you've probably seen that too.
Oh, yeah, especially like, if, you know, before storm, after storm. And if you had a real nasty storm come in, boy, it really kicked up and changed the water from that nice clarity that you would have to, you know, nothing but murky. And then the sand areas that I used to love fishing, if those got all murked up, then have to move over to rocks. And, you know, like you always say, you know, you got to know your terrain, know what you're doing, and then know where to move to.
Yeah. It's a lot like turkey hunting and deer hunting, really, isn't it?
Always good to have those extra places in your back pocket that you can rely on if it's not catching them in the normal spot.
I got to share with you and Wayne and our listeners something that I started doing at the end of the year last year, and I quit pre-fishing before the tournament. The week before the tournament, I didn't go to the waters. I go in blind anymore, knowing where the fish are at. I know they're there. from previous years, many years of fishing, but if they don't hit a certain bait and they're not in a certain water, I go to another type of water. And what we're going to do is we're going to break down the different types of waters there actually is in a river and what you got to look for and what type of baits to throw accordingly to what phase they are in. The fish right now, a bunch of them are post-spawn. They're coming off the beds. We caught fish still on the beds, guys, Saturday.
Wow.
I caught a fish over 2 pounds on top water at 1 o'clock in the hot sun. In the hot sun at 1 o'clock on top water.
Wow.
I guarantee not many people were throwing top water in the middle of hot sun, bluebird sky.
Huh.
We did it.
I wonder if it's because it hasn't been real hot very long. And maybe the water in those deep holes hasn't warmed up that much yet that they would still hit the top water?
The fish that I caught on top water, Linda and I fished a week earlier. Not that week, but a week earlier, the Saturday before. And we found them on a bluff. It was dead water along that bluff, and it was a deep pocket that got shallow real quick. And there were some logs in there, structure in there. And there was a bed right by one of those logs, and I threw over them logs. You could see them underwater, and went that top water through there, and she exploded it. And when I hooked her, fishing the front of the boat, I said, Rick, she's just a keeper. You better look again. When the closer, every time I cranked her in, the closer she would get, the bigger she was. She was like 18 inches. So,
good fish.
One of our good keepers. We had 4 good fish and had 1 dink. The dink kept us from making the top 5 and losing that fish. But we caught probably 50 smallmouth last Saturday. And of the 50, we probably had 15 to 20 keepers. So pretty good trip.
That is a good trip and a good day on the water for anybody, regardless of where you're fishing.
Yeah.
You know, I got to say this before we go to a break. You know, competition fishing, and we got a tournament this coming weekend, everybody. If you haven't heard of it, it's called River Masters Elite Series. We've been working on it for 2 or 3 years trying to come up with a name and how we want to run it. But it's the singles tournament. It's going to be held this Saturday, June the 10th at Van Buren, Missouri. And our slogan is, you can't wear the crest until you beat the best. So what you've got to do to be eligible to fish it is win a top 5 finish in a tournament somewhere to be qualified to fish it. So it's an elite fisherman that's fishing, a master that's beat some of the best. So you fish it by yourself, $100 membership, $100 entry fee. It's 100% payback, Redbone Wayne, from the entry fee money. And the membership money and the sponsorship money is what helps buy trophies and pay for expenses that we may have. We're going to do a weigh-in just like Bassmasters. Microphone, sponsors behind us, everything. We're going to get the crowd into it. We're going to have some giveaways that we're going to give away, draw names for the spectators that's watching. It's going to be a pretty big deal at the Watercraft Landing in Van Buren, Missouri this Saturday. Tournament is from 7 to 4 o'clock p.m.
That sounds like a lot of fun.
It does. All right, and we need to go to break, folks. We'll be back more American Roots Outdoors Radio with Alex Rutledge and his friends right after this.
Cutting off the farm, wishing on some luck. I've been on a big boy for a while. I could load him in the back of my truck. We can take it to a holler.
Hey, Redbone, did you hear about that new deer feed?
What new deer feed?
Hey, Buck Grits, boys. You ain't heard of that yet?
Buck Grits?
BuckGrits.com.
Well, tell us about it. What makes it better than any other deer feed?
Well, Buck Grits has got the protein a deer needs. It's got the fat a deer needs. It's got the amino acids. It's got the energy. It's got it all, brother. It's going to bring them back after the rut, and it's going to put a rack on their head.
And it's going to help the lactating does, I assume, too, after they have the fawns.
That's right. Keep the fawns going and get them for the next crop.
Well, where can I get Buck Grits?
BuckGrits.com. You can get a sample, you can order it directly from the website, and we're coming to a retailer near you.
If you want a healthy deer herd, use Buck Grits.
Across the creek up a big old hill, year after year, got my hunting gear.
Hornady Ammunition presents Welcome Back to American Roots Outdoors, segment 2 of the show. Again, our show is about river smallmouth fishing here in the Ozarks. As we talked in the first segment, we're talking about the different types of waters that there is on a river. It's a lot like structure or overlooking a topo map when you decide to hang a tree stand weighing red bone. So what we do as a fisherman, what I do, and we got a lot of great fishermen in our area. I must tell you, there's probably about 8 to 10 guys could win a tournament on the Curt River any given day. It doesn't matter. They're just that good. And what they all have mastered is understanding where the fish are at and what to use. And that's what we're going to talk about. The first type of water that we look at, if you're looking at a river, say you pull into a landing where, depending on where the landing's at, number one, you got water. Number two, you got banks on both sides of the river. And if you'll notice, what we call a show is where the water gets really swift and the gravel and stuff makes that shallow and the river narrows up, makes the water funnel and makes it swifter. That's what we call the main current, the swift part. Okay? Fish love to go to the swift part when it's extremely hot. Why do you think they go there, Redbone Wayne? You probably know, but...
Yeah, well, there's two reasons. One is water's cooler, and number two, it provides more oxygen.
Got that right.
Provides more oxygen, but also a smallmouth, I'm going to say this, is a creature of ambush. We all know that. And they love to get in behind structure and hide and wait for a mirror, hurt mirror to come by or a crawfish to come out, you know, or insects that's floating down the river, whatever. So they ambush. So you're right. You're spot on. That's why they go there. So you got to know where they're at. Understanding fish that spawned, they like to be in a slow current or in a pocket around some type of structure laying their eggs. As Rick York explained last week, the male guards the bed. The female goes in there, she drops her eggs, lays her eggs. The male come in there, and he will fertilize the nest by laying his sperm on the eggs. Then he guards the nest. Him and her both will guard it for a while. But he mainly guards it, the male does. Now, how do you know to tell the difference between a male fish and a female? Tell us, Wayne. Do you know?
I had a joke on that, but when I'm going to...
You shake one around and one don't.
No, it's had to do with a certain beer, but we're going to stay out of that joke.
Yeah. Okay,
but,
gotcha.
Yeah, the, I'm trying to think here on a small, no, oh, I'm going to let you tell us. I'm going to let you, because I don't honestly don't know if I can tell the difference other than looking at the back end of it.
If you look at their belly, their anal area, they'll be, a circle, and the female, she'll be oblong from laying eggs. That's one of the ways you can tell a female fish.
Another way is if it's guarding the nest, then it's probably a male.
Exactly, and they're usually a lot smaller than, not a lot, but small, quite a bit smaller than the females. Yeah.
Yeah, especially when the female's full of eggs. I mean, she's going to weigh a lot more than a male. Yeah.
Exactly. So, right now, the springtime post-spawn, think about a fish that's laid eggs, and she's laid her eggs, and the male has guarded the nest. They're usually worn out from doing that, you know? So, they're not real aggressive. When they do get aggressive, you got to make them get aggressive, is by throwing a bait in on that nest, something that feels like it's attacking that nest, trying to steal the fry or the eggs from the nest. Mm-hmm. So use baits like a down bait, like a Gitzit, a Senko, a Ned Rig, anything, throwing it into that nest. Or top water, something that looks like, you know, it's threatening, again, the nest. So that's what tactics you use. But the fish, the bigger fish, have not been in the super swift water right now. They have been in the slower current on wood or rock. So when a fish is spawning, she's lost all this energy from laying the eggs and guarding the nest along with the male. She will leave that nest and she finds that area where she's not pressured and she can find easy dinner, easy breakfast, easy food. So think about that.
Yeah, and the fact that she is tired or exhausted is I don't know if that's the official term for a fish, but she's also not going to want to fight that current all the time. I mean, she's just too tired for that. She's not going to want to fight that current. So you're probably not going to find her on a, you know, above or below the rapids either. She's going to be in a big deep hole.
As a whole, you're right, Redbone. But as a whole, if you'll look at it from this perspective, if you're in a hole, and the shell, we talked about the shell in the first segment there, the definition, the water gets super swift and all of a sudden it's shallow. It's very shallow and all of a sudden it drops off drastically. The current goes over the top of those fish and there's a dead spot down there. There's no pressure against them. So they will sometimes spawn in areas like that. So do not rule those spots out because they will spawn because there's no force on that nest right there. But that female sow, we call her a sow, she wants to put that nest like a hen turkey wants to put her nest where it's protected. She doesn't want anything invading that nest. So think about that one.
Yeah, and there's nothing like being on the river and finding that shoal. And on the upside of that shoal, you got a big log laying there, and behind it, there's a big still hole about 10 feet by 10 feet. And you go,
there you go.
Oh, my goodness.
Right.
Exactly. You know, again, we're talking about definitions and explaining the different types of water. You got pockets. The pocket is what we call a still spot next to swift water. Usually in those pockets, there's some kind of cover there. Those are great target areas for these fish to be setting for ambush or even having nests there. But again, the spawn is pretty much over right now. You know, most of the fish have spawned it out. But there is some bass, a few bass still on beds, very few. So the water you need to focus on right now is those slower dead spots.
Now, do you expect
that? When the weather keeps getting hotter and hotter, Wayne, the temperatures increase. They are driven back to the swifter water once they've gathered their strength after the spawning. So they'll usually, right now, your bigger fish usually at the lower end of the hose in the middle of the water.
Yeah, and I'm, when we come back after this next segment, I got a question to hit you on that swift water and the temperatures. But everybody, you're listening to American Roots Outdoors, and we'll be returning back right after this.
Hey, y'all, it's Tyler Farr, and you're hanging with me and my good buddy, Alex Rutledge, on American Roots Outdoors.
In my old pair of hunting boots, passed on down, planted deep in the ground, around your heart, so you never gotta worry.
Hey guys, it's food plot planting time here in the Ozarks and all across the country. What are you planting this year, Wayne?
I'm going to put some smorgasbord in with a whole lot of clover.
You're going to put some extra clover in it.
What? Smorgasbord? What is smorgasbord?
Man, it is a variety of annuals and perennials that'll get you through fall time, winter time, and all the way into spring.
It's awesome. You want to plant healthier food plots to track all kinds of game? Go to www.eagleseed.com. It's a smorgasbord. You know, we all get tired of certain things. The smorgasbord has everything. Your deer will love it. Eagleseed.com. American Roots.
Eagle Seed presents Welcome Back to American Roots Outdoors, segment 3 of our show. Again, we're repeating river smallmouth fishing in the Ozarks. We're talking about the different types of water to focus on at different times of year because the fish move accordingly depending on weather, temperatures, cloud cover, and the time of the year it is. The fish are coming off the post-spawn. So a lot of these bigger fish are kind of worn down, and they're staying in the slower water right now. you will occasionally find some big ones if there's a drastic drop-off where the current goes over the top of them. They're down there where they don't have to fight the current. They can just sit in one spot and float. So understanding where they're at is a huge part of being successful in catching these river smallmouth, Wayne.
Yeah, and you know, you had mentioned in the last segment about the temperatures not yet being hot enough for them to want to move to the rapids or to the swift-moving water. Now, this was last week. Now, this week, with temperatures being in the 80s, low 90s all week long, do you expect that to change for this weekend, or do you expect it to stay the same because the evening and nighttime temperatures are still down in the 50s?
Yep, they're going to move. They're going to move. A drastic weather change can affect animals and fish. So the cooler nights, I got up yesterday morning, it was 53 degrees at my house, Wayne, our house. You know, and that keeps the water temperatures cooler than normal. So what happens is, as the day progresses, the sun gets higher and it gets warmer, it heats up the water slower than normal because the nights are continuing staying cool. I think the average water temperature on Current River is around 56, 54 degrees. For them to spawn, and we've talked about the spawn, it has to be a certain temperature. So, yes, I'm going to say yes, they're going to start moving into the swifter water, especially if we have several days in a row of extremely hot temperatures, Redbone, Wayne.
Yeah, and you know, Alex, as we continue this trip down the river trying to find fish and different types of water, one of my favorite things to do on the river is look for a bend in the river. Because I like to fish those, bends where the water's beating up against and turning, because inside that bend, the water's not going to be as swift, and it's going to hold fish.
Hmm. Again, it could be one of those ledges where it's going over the top of them, and the water's calm underneath the current. Yeah, great target areas, especially, I think, again, I'm repeating, you're going to see more and more fish start moving to the swifter water.
Mm-hmm.
Now, from my experience, and from my, I'm 59 years old next week, June 13th, everybody. And my experience, I have learned, the hotter it is, the more fish go to current. But these old fish, we call old fish, it takes several years to grow a 12-inch smallmouth. I can't remember what MD said it was, according to their studies, like 3 to 5 years to grow a 12-inch smallmouth. Now, how many years do you think it takes to grow a 20-inch smallmouth, Wayne, Redbone? Think about that. Those fish are a lot like a big buck or an old gobbler. Think about it. Be open-minded. A big buck, the older they get, they survive to be that old because they've avoided dangers, predators, etc. Could be a gar or other fishermen or whatever. So the bigger, older fish, they are sensitive to sunlight. I really believe a lot of these old fish are never caught, or it's because they get up underneath a bluff that's got a cave under or whatever. They only come out to the edge to feed once in a while. Think about that. A big mature buck makes mistakes whenever the rut is on. And it's just like a deer getting out to chase a doe. And these fish are coming up underneath that bluff, whatever to feed. They're making a mistake, and that's how they get caught. So I think a lot of the older fish are sensitive to sunlight, and they like to stay in dark areas.
Well, that's what brought them to the dance. I mean, that's why they are the big older fish.
Yeah. They learn to evade dangerous and stuff. And my brother Jack, he's won the King of the River 3 times. And he's a master, a true master. And when we say master, that means anybody that's won tournaments, anybody that's made the top 5, you're a true master. You beat the best to wear the crest of river masters. He really believes there's smallmouth that will die of old age. It goes up underneath these bluffs. He's told me, he goes, I know, and he's not a bull crapper. I've had a hold of 6-pound smallmouth before and had them up to the boat. And lose them. The biggest smallmouth I ever had on my life was with Tyler Farr and his buddy. We was fishing above Van Buren Bass Rock. And I was throwing, I don't care to tell everybody, I don't ever hide what I throw. I was throwing a 4-inch Senko. It was a tan and white color, two-tone, and a slider head. And I threw it on an old log. It was, it kind of had gravel around it, and it was somewhat swift, but not super swift. And I threw it in there, a long cast, probably a 30-yard cast, and let it drift in there towards that log. And when I set the hook, you could see that fish load up and turn sideways, and she took and run downriver like a shark, run back up the river, and I had her hooked for about a minute and a half, 2 minutes, got her right up to the boat. Tyler said, let me get the net, let me get the net. I said, wait, she's not done fighting, not done fighting. And I'm fishing fluorocarbon line, and I guess whenever I tightened the line up, I burnt the line, and she broke off with my hook in her mouth right where I tied the lure. And to this day, I really think that fish was over 5 pounds.
Wow.
And Tyler and his buddy is with us, Alex, I really think the fish would go 6. I don't know. But I know 5 pounds for sure. It's like over 24 inches, guys. It's the biggest smallmouth I ever had hooked in my life.
It's a Boone and Crockett smallmouth.
Yeah. But, you know, I caught her on a spinner reel using a slider head and that two-tone colored Senko. That was in August. But, you know, when you catch these smallmouth, and we're going to talk about that in part 3, how you need to fight them, what type of equipment to use to land these big fish. And I learned some things fishing with Rick York. Rick hardly uses spinning reels. He uses all bait casters. And his line that he uses is 12 to 15 pounds on all of his bait casters. And he fishes fluorocarbon. So the spinning reels, I usually use 6 to 10-pound test line, usually 8-pound test. You got to finesse those fish when you fight them with a spinning reel. So they're going to burn line. And the trick is when they're on logs and rocks, you've got to get them fish hooked and hurt and get them away from those rocks and logs, or they will come off like the fish did on me this past Saturday. And the spinning reel is why I lost that fish.
Yeah, and I'll add something to that when we come back after this timeout. We'll be back with more American Roots Outdoors Radio with Alex and his friends in just a moment.
This is Brenda Valentine, and you're listening to American Roots Outdoors with Alex Rutledge and friends.
Accurate, deadly, dependable, Hornady ammunition. From a two-man operation in 1949 to a world-leading innovator of bullet, ammunition, reloading tool, and accessories design and manufacturer today. Hornady, each piece is hand-inspected to ensure consistency and quality. Ammunition engineered to perform flawlessly, simply put, the best. Hornady ammunition. Find Hornady ammunition at a retailer near you and at Hornady.com.
Buck Grinch presents Welcome Back to American Roots Outdoors, segment 4 of our show. This is the last segment, of the radio show. And those of you deer hunters out there, you need to be feeding Buck Grinch year-round if you want to see healthy does, healthy fawns. I got to share something with everybody. I'm getting off the subject of river fishing. But I have a good friend that shared something with me. He said, my grandpa used to do this for our horses, his horses. And he said, I learned this as a kid to keep horse flies and ticks and stuff off the horses. I said, what did he do? He said, Alex, he said, when he would feed, he would go buy apple cider vinegar and just sprinkle a little apple cider vinegar over the top of the feed. I started doing that to my buck grits, and the deers went even crazier over it. And I'm seeing the deers in my pictures with less ticks on their ears and stuff, guys.
Wow.
And I'm not seeing the deers fighting and kicking at flies and stuff like they was 3 or 4 days ago. It's pretty neat. Apple cider vinegar. Want to use much on it. Just the top of it. On top, just a little bit of it.
Whoever came up with that idea?
I don't know, but I use that same thing for my chickens. I put it in their 55-gallon drum, and they say it's healthy for the chickens to do that to them, too.
It is.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, you were talking about that big fish getting off on you. And, you were talking about the fact that, you know, the spinning rod and it broke where you tied the hook. Let me tell you something else that you need to check. Whenever you go fishing, and I'll just tell this story. My cousin and I, cousin Patrick, we were on the Warm Fork here just outside of Thayer, and there's a place called Granny Blue Hole. Used to hold a lot of fish, and it's kind of hard to access now. You, in fact, you can't access it without a boat now, but used to, you could walk the banks and you could fish it, and loaded with smallmouth and had some largemouth, and of course all your other fish too, your sunfish and goggle eye and all that stuff. But one day we were fishing for a smallmouth, and we were fishing on the lower side of a shoal, and I was using my brown and orange Mr. Twister. I talk about that all the time because they were great in this particular creek, in this particular area. That's what the smallmouth liked. So I was throwing, and I was getting fish, getting them right up to the bank, and they were just flopping off over and over and over. I mean, like 6-7 fish in a row. And my cousin Patrick goes, "What's going on over there? I've never seen you lose so many fish ever." And I got checking my Mr. Twister, and somehow the hook had broke off.
But Mr. Twister never came up.
So I was fishing with this brown and orange jig with a spinner and no hook.
Hey, that's why you need to check your lure.
That's my point. You got to check.
You got to check your lures. You got to pay attention. I'll tell you another secret that I like to do. When you buy your hooks, if you'll pay attention to the turn of the hook, if it's turned up, and depending on what size of the hook and what kind of hook it is, some of these hooks bend real easy.
Mm-hmm.
What I like to do is take and turn my hook down a little more where it's not slanted up, where it's almost parallel with the neck of the hook, so it's parallel.
Yeah.
So when you do that, it takes more of the fish to bend it for them to come off.
Yeah.
Always pay attention to your barb on your hook.
Mm-hmm.
The barb on the hook is what holds that fish. So if your barb's real little or it's gone, that fish can come off, especially if they hit a log or something.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Think about it.
Yeah, well, boy, there's nothing more frustrating than to grab that lure and go, "What's going on with this thing?" and look at it, and the hook has been broken. Right in the bend of the hook. It was just broken off.
Yeah, I remember as a kid, my grandmother took me with her old tackle box, and the lures look like they've been there like since 1930s. And she's like, "Oh, these still catch fish. These are still good." And I'm like, "Okay, you know, I was just a little kid." And we were just fishing bluegills. Well, I just happened to get a bass that hooked on it, and it broke right off. And when we pulled the lure out, or the bobber and the hook and that out, the hook was so rusted that it broke in half. but she was 70 years old. She doesn't know,
That's why it's important to upgrade your equipment every year. Look at your stuff, say, in February, if you start fishing in March, and clean your reels. You know, soapy water, take them apart in soapy water and stuff and clean them and re-grease them and stuff. That's why I've got some reels that's realistically that's 4, 5, 6 years old. If you take care of your stuff, it'll last you a long time. And it's kind of like maintenance on a car or your bows or your guns. You take care of them, they're going to last you a long time.
No doubt. And I know they always...
I want to talk about...
Oh, go ahead.
I want to talk... We've got a few minutes left. I want to talk a little bit more about another type of water that is overlooked. And you're going to find out as the summer progresses. Areas that I look for when the fish have gained their strength back, et cetera, after spawning, is anything with grass, vegetation. And there may be a log over there next to grass, and it's the lower end of a hole, and there's slow current in there. That's why I love to throw a swim bait or a spinner bait, or swim a Gitchet, or swim a Senko. Now, what I mean by swimming is throw the bait in. Don't let it lay. Crank it. Crank it out. Also like to take those baits at the head of these shows when they get to the swift water and throw downriver or cross river and bring it into the swift water like that crawl or that tube or that swim bait's trying to get away from something. What it does, it triggers a strike. Another thing I like to do, I'm throwing a bank and say the fish I've noticed they're not aggressive, and I want to entice a strike. Because I'll throw my bait in as soon as it hits next to the bank. I crank it like three fast cranks, like it's trying to get away to get that impulse strike and let it fall. That makes fish react, you know, because they're sitting on ambush. Think about it. Man, I got to get that when they see something trying to run to get away. So that's some of the tricks that I do. And I fish everything imaginable, Carolina rig, down baits, crank baits, spinner baits, slider heads, shaky heads. I pull my own jigs, double wire. I may fish a crawl on that. I may fish a sinker on it and fish accordingly. So the secret to river fishing in this part of the show is understanding the waters, the different types of waters, and using the bait accordingly to what the way they're acting.
Yeah, and one more thing, Alex, before we go, and you were talking about fishing in the grassy areas, along the banks of the river. I like to throw to the far end of that grassy area and then just crank exactly. that spinner bait right along the edge mm-hmm. or maybe 6 or 8 inches right. out from the edge.
Oh, yeah.
And those bass will absolutely explode on it.
Yep. I fish with some of the best. I fish with several people and I can name some of them. Derek Hampton, he's 3-time king of the river. Him and I was partners 1 year. And I can say this, if you fish partners and you got two guys that's super excellent, you think a lot alike, you fish a lot alike, you'll end up hurting each other. Because what happens is you're using the same techniques, same methods, and you're hitting the spots that he would normally hit. And it forces him to either throw the same area you threw or a new spot, and he's not going to get the strikes. So sometimes it's better to have a guy that's a little better than the other one. Or the guy that's running the boat, which we float the boats backwards down the current river or any rivers we fish. When there's current, we're running jet boats. And the guy in the front of the boat is the guy that holds the guy in the back to catch the fish. The guy in the back of the boat, Redbone Wayne, listeners, is the guy that should win the tournament for you. If the guy in the front's doing his job and holding you, guiding you, that's the secret to winning river tournaments, too. One of them.
All right. Alex, we're out of time for today. Seems like this hour has gone by awfully fast.
Well, great subject matter. I love talking about it. Both of you guys are smallmouth fishermen, and we love sharing our knowledge with everybody. And I just want to make mention again, River Masters Elite Series Tournament is this Saturday. But if you've made the top five, come over and fish it with us. Watercrest Landing above the bridge at Van Buren, Missouri. $100 membership, $100 entry fee, 100% payback. Wise Eye Cameras has donated a camera for the first place winner of all three tournaments, Redbone Wayne. $200 Wise Eye Camera, mini camera. Second place is an Easy Start 12 to 18 boat starter, Easy Start, jump start, that you slot a DeWalt or Mahindra or any kind of battery in it. It's a portable jumper you can carry within your boat, your truck. Also, Jolly Cone has furnished a bunch of shirts, caps, cups. And a few other sponsors have donated a lot of stuff. We couldn't do it without our sponsors. It's helping us with River Masters. We're going to have a day this summer, maybe next summer. It's for the kids. We're going to have an evening where we're going to have kids come to the river. We can get the date set. We'll give them boat rides and take them smallmouth fishing. It doesn't cost a kid a dime. We want to introduce kids to the great outdoors, God's creation, the smallmouth. Wayne?
Well, like we say here at American Roots, when your roots run deep and strong,
there's no reason to fear the wind.
So you never gotta worry, hey, what the wind might do. American Roots.
Thank you for joining us for today's American Roots Outdoors Radio with Alex Rutledge. You can find us on Facebook. Look us up on the World Wide Web at AmericanRootsOutdoors.com. We'll be back again next week on this great radio station.
Wise Eye presents American Roots Outdoors with Alex Rutledge and his friends. This is Wayne Locke in the studio with Mike Crace. Alex had to get off the phone because he's got to get his stuff ready for this weekend's tournament. From what I understood when I talked to him earlier today, he was getting all his equipment prepped and getting his boat ready. And everybody thinks, oh, I'll just hop in the boat and go. Now when you're tournament fishing, you got to have everything ready exactly. to go, and you don't want anything. And that's another thing that I don't think we've ever touched on the last couple of years, and that is boat safety. And I know we're going to try and hit that, I think, next week.
Yeah.
But one of the things I do want to point out to people is if you're cleaning your boat and you're taking kids and that out fishing, make sure you got all your hooks, all your lures put away.
Yeah. Because
that is very easy for a little one to say, oh, look, you know, a shiny little fish, you know, lure and not realize that those treble hooks.
Not even see it and step on it.
Oh, gosh, yeah.
And nothing will ruin your day on the lake or river like a fish hook in the foot.
Nope.
Because that means you're going to have to probably go somewhere and get a tetanus shot, get that thing taken out.
I had a fish hook in the back of my head once from a buddy. We were in the park ranger. I had to be about 14 years old. 15, we were out fishing in the metro parks and just, you know, we were fishing for carp. I used to love doing that as a kid. And my buddy took and swung back and he just ripped as hard as he could to try and get it down the river. And that hook caught me in the back of the head and peeled a little bit of my scalp. Man, I was bleeding like a stuck pig. But a park ranger just happened to be coming by and heard the scream and then hopped out of his vehicle, ran down the bank to me and then took me to the hospital where my parents picked me up. But I got to still have a scar, a big old scar back there from that. And my buddy says it's still the biggest carp he ever caught. But, you know, I'm going to get Ansel back for that one.
I wouldn't consider you a carp. No, I would consider you a drum.
Oh, jeez. Couldn't get any better. It's got to go a little lower. Okay.
All right. Well, we've been talking smallmouth fishing and Alex telling some stories and a lot of great information for the folks that like the smallmouth fish. And, you know, it is a great, and even if you don't tournament fish, you know, not a competitive fisherman, just want to get out and spend the day fishing, it is a great fish to target, to go after. Because they are very, they're not difficult to catch, but they're, you've like Alex has been talking the last 2 weeks on the radio show and on the bonus, you've got to kind of know where to find them. They're not like some fish that you can go sunfish, goggle eye. I mean, you find a nest of goggle eye or sunfish or something, every time you go to that spot, those fish are pretty much going to be
right.
And the smallmouth are not that way. They're going to change according to the weather, water temperature, how bright the sun's shining, how cloudy the sky is. I mean, there are so many variables to catching smallmouth that you really got to think about it. You really got to work at it to be really successful at it.
Yeah, and I know this comment is going to get some bluegill and sunfish fishermen leaving nasty messages, but they're pickier eaters. I mean, I hate saying it. You take a kid bluegill fishing, you put anything on the hook, and they're going to go after it. It's not the same with smallmouth. You have to put some effort into it. Although
you got to find what they're wanting to eat today.
Right, and I know there's some perch fishermen and bluegill fishermen and that are going to be like, oh no, that's the same with us too. You know, you can't put a hot dog on every time and win a tournament.
Yeah.
Well, maybe you can.
Well, I'm not even talking about a tournament. I'm just talking about fishing for fun.
Fishing for fun, right.
And you know, one of the greatest fishing trips I ever had with my father-in-law was a bluegill fishing trip. Mm-hmm. Or not bluegill, but a goggle-eye trip.
Okay.
We found a nest of goggle-eye and we caught fish for like 6 straight hours, every cast.
I have never not only heard of a goggle eye till I got down here. I've never seen one, and I've never tasted one. And everybody around here, when I say that, they're like, you have no idea what you are missing in life.
That's right. Well, first off, when you see one, you'll recognize it because them eyes are bulging out of their heads.
Is it like a guppy fish? You know, like the little guppy fish you get in your tank that has the big old ball eyes?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, not quite as prominent, but okay. out there. And the big old black eyes.
It's the Marty Feldman of fish.
Yeah, kind of. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Without the hump. That's a Young Frankenstein.
Yeah.
Young Frankenstein reference for you there.
What a movie that was.
Yeah. And the hump kept moving. You ever recognize that?
Yeah. It's on the left one side, right on the other.
Anyway, we digress. But anyway, and went back there again like a month later.
Mm-hmm.
Same spot. Threw a big old fat nightcrawler out there, just let it sink, boom, goggle, I hit it again. So my point being, those kind of fish, they're going to be there most every time.
Okay.
When they find that home base, at least that's been my experience over the years. But not so with the smallmouth.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Alex was talking about, you know, some may take up residence somewhere, but they're going to move, and they're going to move during the day.
Right.
You know, where you find her this morning, you might not find her this afternoon.
True.
And just so many variables. And that's why they're such a fun and a challenging fish to fish for. Hence is why they have smallmouth fishing tournaments.
Yeah. And I've fished smallmouth a little bit. My smallmouth fishing has basically been up in Lake Erie, where we're talking massive body of water and fishing around the islands and that. So this whole river fishing is going to be all new to me, moving down here to Missouri and then, you know, the Ozarks and that. But one question I have for you, and you may know the answer to, and I would love to ask a biologist this. You know, we always talk about how turkeys can get taught. You know, they'll learn if they get called in and they find out that call wasn't a female. Good luck bringing them in the next day, or even the next year. I wonder if fish can they be taught? Can they say, "Hey, I've been caught too many times on this color lure. I'm just never going to go after it again." Do they have that kind of a memory, do you think? I mean, we always talk about, hey, they got old because they got smart.
Yeah, maybe short term. Okay. Maybe short term.
Is that why you can bring a lure out that, you know, you used to use all the time like 3 years ago and then bring it back and it's all new to them?
Yeah, I mean, don't know.
I'm just curious with that. I'd have to ask a biologist that. Because that makes you wonder then if that's why they say lures and designs repeat themselves at like every 5 years. Yeah. Is it because the fish is forgotten?
Could be. Could be a short-term memory thing. But I don't know. You know, there's so many fish in the river or in the lakes that the chances that one particular fish has tried to bite the same lure over and over and over, I think, are pretty slim.
Well, I don't necessarily mean the same lure. Maybe the same color. Like, have you ever found that colors wear out in a river?
Yeah, I don't think so.
Okay.
No, don't think so. Not colors, because crawdads, you know, I mean, they change colors with the seasons. You know, they're green when they're younger, and they get kind of brown, and they get red. I get some orange on them. A lot of it depends on the habitat and where they, what's surrounding them. So those fish eat them every day.
Yeah, that's true. Right.
You know, and they're the same color. You know, your shad, if you're talking about, you know, lake fishing, the shad are the same color, and the fish eat them every day. So they think, oh, there's another one of those chartreuse things. I'm not eating that. Last time I did, it hurt my lower lip. I don't think that's an issue.
And that's actually kind of where I was going with this, because a buddy I used to fish with, you know, as a kid, Jeff Milhorn, I'm going to give him a plug, Jeff Milhorn, one of the greatest bass fishermen I ever fished with. But as a kid, he kept saying, I went to go grab I think it was a pink worm out, had a pink stripe, and he's like, don't bother with the pink. They know it. They're not going to bite it. I've outfished them with the pink. It's always stuck with me with all these years. Do they learn, say, hey, you know, I've been caught on pink, I'm not going after pink no more? Or is it, hey, after a week, they're going to be like, whatever?
Long term, I wouldn't think so, because they're only going to hit what resembles and what makes them think that it's something wild in the river that they're going to bite.
Okay. All right, man, just curious. Something to ponder.
I'm no biologist. That's just my thought.
You're not a biologist, but you stayed at a Red Roof Inn hotel once.
I'm not a biologist, but I've seen one on TV.
Yeah.
All right. And that's it. I mean, we're kind of wrapping up here, Wayne.
Yeah. What a great informative show. I mean,
go back and listen to the radio portion of this particular podcast, because there's really some great information.
Yeah. And if you're young and getting started in this, you're definitely going to want to pick up on, especially if you're new to river fishing like myself. Every episode we've been doing, I'm learning a boatload of information because it is radically different than what I fished and how I fished on Lake Erie. So, from one extreme to another. And we're going to wrap it up with that. And again, I appreciate everybody listening to the podcast and hope you enjoy the radio show.
Remember to leave your review.
Yes, leave a review, please.
A good review, please.
Yep. And not on Yelp. Don't look for us on Yelp. We're not there. But yeah, leave us a review, Apple Podcast or in Google Podcast. That'd be greatly appreciated. And like we say here at American Roots,
when your roots run deep and strong,
there is no reason to fear the wind.
We'll be waiting when they hit the ground. Big time coming, it's what we do. From a whippoorwill to an old owl's hoot. Sitting still till it's time to shoot.